You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 7 October. Local foreign exchange reserves data due 8 a.m. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Matete Tolari from RMB. Here's jobs data on Friday. Man, that just really good, strong data coming out in the job space. Martin Ackerman from Citadel, that increase in conflict in the Middle East, it is 1 year anniversary. Oil, gold, I want to get a better sense around what's happening there. Then we're going to be talking PWC on their 2024 SA Mine Report. If you haven't been in gold and copper, it's been tough. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Capitec Connect, SA's fastest growing mobile business. Could fiber be next frontier? Business Day, SABC achieves first unqualified audit opinion in 14 years. CEO attributes outcome to financial discipline and good governance. Yes to both. Morning markets. US was green. S&P up 0.9%. The Nasdaq was up 1.2%. Over in the east, it's green across the board. Sydney up 0.1%. Tokyo 2% higher. Hong Kong up 1%. And Tencent up 0.6%. Commodities are mixed. Gold, $2,665. Brent a little higher at $77.80. Platinum, $1,002, and palladium a little higher at 1,017. The rand, 1749. Bitcoin, 63,500. And top 40 opening call, we're looking for a 290 point green open. That is almost 0.4% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Matete Tolari from RMB. He's head of FX execution. Matete, appreciate the early morning time. Jobs data out in the US on Friday. Non-farm payrolls expected was 140,000. They got 254,000. Unemployment was better at 4.1%. Previous and expected was 4.2%. I mean, the short answer is the U.S. Jobs market, and hence I suspect we could probably say economy is doing great.
Good morning, Simon. Yeah, look, a blockbuster jobs report on Friday, really paving the way towards a soft landing. I mean, This is in a situation whereby inflation would return to normal levels whilst the U.S. economy averts a recession. Like you said, 254,000 jobs are created, blowing past the expectations of 150,000 that the market was expecting. The unemployment number, as you said, is going down to 4.1%. The labor market ended a months-long slowdown, and I think it is rebuking any lingering concern about an imminent recession and also easing the pressure on Jerome Powell to stimulate the economy with, you know, rapid fire interest rate cuts like we've seen. Instead, I mean, it is showing a robust bill of health for the US economy. It allows the Fed to keep a close watch on inflation whilst at the same time steadily cutting interest rates in an effort to maintain the solid job market. So in hindsight, it looks like a soft landing is in sight. The bottom line is that the labor market is resilient. It is continuing to support consumers, and also the Fed will be cutting rates. I mean, previously, the weaker than expected jobs numbers that we had in July and August had really stoked concern that, you know, the U.S. outlook could be gloomy. We could be heading for a hard recession. And then you saw the Fed cutting by 50 basis points. And that's really signaling a shift towards a greater focus on safeguarding a strong labor market. Now, the fresh jobs data that we saw on Friday, you know, it really defies such worries. It is really painting a rosier picture of the economy in which, you know, employers are hiring at a strong pace and large people are also staying on the jobs, and also wages are rising at a fast rate. Now, the upside surprise really suggests that the labor market may be a picture of strength and not weakness, but you know, like we know, one set of data does not necessarily give the market an all clear sign. It's rather a step in the right direction. If you think about it, inflation has slowed down dramatically from the peak of 9% that we saw 2 years ago, though it remains slightly higher than the Fed's target of 2%. Now, the combination of the stable inflation and also the employment growth really marks a dramatic shift for the economic uncertainty that has loomed over the U.S. economy for the past 3 years. Now, the labor market data on Friday really softens the pressure for Jerome Powell to speed up their rate cut and stimulate the economy. In turn, it's expected that the Fed will be cutting by 25 basis points at their next meeting in November. So the data really shows that they don't really need to be in a rush right now.
Yeah, I take that point, and it really is. I mean, the 50 points from Jerome Powell, I think maybe we thought there was something that was going poorly, but now suddenly with that regard, I mean, I think you're right, 25 points does seem to be absolutely the next cut, which will be, I think, the meeting's in about a month or so. We'll leave it at that there. Mateta Tolari, head of FX execution at RMB. And that's our question today on LinkedIn and Twitter. I mean, it was expected unchanged. We got 4.1. That's a small number, but it really does look like the US economy is strong and can avoid a slowdown. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Martin Ackerman, Chief Economist and Advisory Partner at Citadel. Martin, appreciate the time. A year since the Middle East conflict started, we had an escalation of sorts last week, Iranian rockets raining down on Israel. But my sense is that sort of this escalation has frankly been anticipated. Oil moved, but was already moving higher and ahead of the increase in the conflict.
Yes, good morning, Simon. I think rather a muted reaction from markets, especially if you compare markets during the Russian-Ukrainian war. And I guess part of the reason is that, you know, if you think Russia-Ukraine, a lot more commodities that the world rely on. In this case, you know, Iran probably 4% of oil supply, so it's important, but it's not that big. So if you think about markets over the last year, they basically ignored the conflict, you know. You could probably argue that gold showed a little bit of that typical safe haven in a geopolitical uncertain environment. And then last week, pretty much the same. The Asian markets were running on the Chinese stimulus.
Yeah.
And if anything, you could probably argue that, the world market sniffed a little bit of uncertainty, also saw a little bit of increase in gold. And then our own rand, you know, we typically a risk indicator. So the rand moved back to 17.50 from testing 17. And that is probably just a small indication of a little bit of uncertainty globally in terms of the ongoing conflict.
I want to come to Rand in a moment, but the oil as well. I mean, OPEC, I mean, they keep on saying they're committed to actually cutting production changes by year end. And certainly OPEC, I mean, if there's any constraints, my sense is Saudi Arabia's got capacity. I mean, they can kind of manage oil supply in terms of global demand.
Yes, so it looks like, you know, if there's issues in terms of the supply from Iran, then OPEC is probably going to match that and try to keep a lid on the oil price. So that's why the market is probably not too concerned about that. Again, you know, if you go back to Russia, Ukraine, much bigger supply, not only oil back then, but, you know, sunflower and grain and all of that kind of issues. It's all about, you know, the fact that it's still regionalized.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just look at what's been happening over the weekend in Cape Town in terms of, you know, the people behind, in this case, Palestine marching, you know, all around the world, this is popping up. So the emotional involvement is very different from Russia, Ukraine. It is something that's impacting all over the world. And that's why if more people or more countries get involved, you know, the scene can spread. I think that's a risk that the market is keeping an eye on.
And perhaps that was, I mean, you mentioned the dollar. We saw, I mean, I think we started the week at around 17.04 and the rand went out to around 17.54. That was partly the rand. That was also just a lot of dollar strength, which is, almost a bit of a flight to safety.
Yes. So that's like I've said, the rand, unfortunately, is part of the global risk indicator. So when it's risk off, whatever reason, capital flows into safe havens, and the dollar is still one of those. So then the rand normally takes a bit of a knock. That was all, I guess, around the Middle East developments. The other side of the coin is also true. But for now, that was with the oil market and probably a little bit of movement in gold, the only indication that there's some part of the market that is concerned about these developments.
You mentioned gold. It didn't really respond last week, but it has had a very good 2024. In fact, it's had a very good run, I don't know, the last 3, 4, 5 years.
Yes.
And that has been partly, I suspect, a response to the Ukraine-Russia invasion, the sort of weaponization of the US dollar. But also, I imagine, just general concerns as well. We sent banks are buying, and we're seeing worries around things such as conflict, such as inflation, such as hard or soft landings.
Yeah, so gold typically acts as a safe haven alternative.
Mm-hmm.
All the reasons that you've mentioned. The fact is that, or the reality is that last year, gold performed in line with your risky growth assets. So if you had gold in your portfolio and you were, for whatever reason, slightly underweight equity, you still would have performed extremely well because gold had similar, if not better, returns compared to those kind of asset classes. So all of those reasons that you've mentioned, global uncertainty, alternative to the dollar, but also, coming out of a high inflation environment. So that's another factor that's supporting gold. So with those kind of factors still in play, I don't think gold's seen the top yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we still have some allocation to that in many of our portfolios.
Yeah, I take your point. And in many ways, both the conflicts are human tragedies, but in terms of commodities, it's the Russia-Ukraine, which is really hurting the supply chains around the commodity space. We'll leave it there. Martin Ackerman, he's Chief Economist and Advisory Partner, Citadel. Appreciate the early morning time. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Checking now with Vuyiswa Klaglang, PwC South Africa Mining Assurance Partner. Vuyiswa, appreciate the early morning time. Your 2024 SA Mine Report came out. It really has been, for our local miners, it's been pretty much all about gold. Otherwise, it's been a largely tough year for local miners.
Yes, it has. We've seen from the results that a lot of our PGM operators have had a significant drop in revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Your coal operators, also miners, have also had a significant drop in revenue. Our industry really is weighed more on the PGM and the coal ones. Gold has done exceptionally. Copper also did very well. But in overall, the industry is going through difficulty.
Copper is certainly the shiny new exciting metal. I mean, it's been driving some M&A activity. We had the BHP Group proposed takeover of Anglo American rejected by the Anglo American board, and ultimately BHP walked away from it. But copper does seem to be the exciting and driving merger and acquisition activity locally and globally.
Yes, it has. And it really is because of those critical minerals that everyone is talking about. So these are the minerals that are going to assist in the transition to net zero. So copper being one of the key elements there, and with a forecasted shortage in future. So miners are positioning themselves for the demand, and therefore it is a key driver in the M&A.
One thing we have seen, mining is cyclical. Everyone knows that. Miners, listeners, yourself, myself, we get that the cyclical nature of mining. In these tough times, it really is around your balance sheet and kind of safeguarding that balance sheet and making sure it's in good shape. And my sense is that most of our miners have got balance sheets that are relatively decent at this point in the cycle.
Yeah, they really are. So when we look at in 2016, the leverage ratio, so your debt ratio, were around 2, which is quite high. But when we sit now in June 2024, they're sitting at around 0.77. And what that means is that there's not that much debt, which gives them greater flexibility in being able to survive the down cycle. So they're able to go to the lenders with a cleaner, a better balance sheet and borrow money. And they're able also not to have a huge interest or debt payments during this difficult period, which gives you more flexibility. So what the miners are doing, they're saying, well, I've got this great balance sheet. Some of them are already looking in at their debt and saying, how can I strategically look at my debt at this moment, so my covenants, so that they're not an issue at the downward cycle. Mm-hmm. But what they're also looking at is their income statement, right, and their capital allocation. Income statement, looking at their expenses and seeing how can they reduce those to survive the down cycle. But the balance sheet is definitely key, because that's where you'll be able, that's what you'll use with your lenders to be able to survive this difficult period.
Does this also perhaps give them an opportunity maybe for some opportunistic activity? I mean, obviously it's tough out there, maybe sort of, I don't know, eyeing each other. They've got balance sheets that are, they're okay, all things considered.
Definitely. So when you've got the stronger balance sheet, what you can do gives you a lot of flexibility, right? So you're able to say, well, if you're seeing opportunities, to be able to take them on. One of the things that's different, I think, with coal miners is that they have difficulty in getting lending. So everything is facilitated through what they can produce or what they have, the cash they have on their balance sheet, because coal is seen as dirty. So for them, even more important for M&A that their balance sheet is good and strong, because they need to support their own M&A activities.
You made the point up the top of the interview around the energy transition, and my sense is, and particularly, I mean, it is, the focus on copper. That does seem to be the sweet spot for mining. I mean, as you say, coal mining is going to be tough to go to your banker and get more loans if you're in that right space. And that is part of the big attraction, not just for copper, but for mining generally, to be positioned in that next major trend. And that trend is going to be the energy transition.
100%. And that's, so last week was the Joburg Kindaba.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the discussion was around that. How do I place myself for the future? How do I survive this down cycle for the future? And again, it went back. The miners were saying, balance sheet, balance sheet, balance sheet, balance sheet, balance sheet, which was actually great because our publication focused on that. But the balance sheet is your key talker, basically. Mm. Because that's what you'll use to talk to somebody else, to be able to facilitate any transaction, to be able to get borrowing. Your where you are standing at the moment, the strength of what you've got is your opener.
And I mean, if to sum up, I mean, my sense is that yes, the revenues and profits are under pressure. Yes, we're seeing retrenchments and shaft closure, falling stock prices, some restructuring. But our miners, notwithstanding, they're okay positioned. You mentioned the debt's not looking too bad. Certainly, the demand at some point will come back. It's been a tough couple of years, but they are generally weathering it and generally looking okay.
Yes, and the industry is actually quite positive about a whole lot of things. So you can see from the discussions that are being had that they still want to continue, which is great. So they want to weather the storm. A lot of them are still looking and saying, hey, the government must look and be able to provide certainty in terms of policy, because they want to explore, they want to do exploration so that they can increase their investments in South Africa. So the talk is positive. The actions seem positive. It's all about fixing the current issues that we have. So things like, for example, Transnet issues of getting for the bulk commodities to be able to get them to the port. Those kind of things that are within South African control, that's important, because usually we are price takers in terms of commodity prices. So fixing the things that we can things that are within our control becomes key. So from our perspective, based on what the industry is saying, based on what government is saying, it seems like everyone wants South Africa to win. Yeah. Everybody's looking to say, let's survive this, let's get things right so that South Africa as a country, because a lot of employment and other communities, everything depends on mining. Let's get our mining sector up again.
Yeah, and I like your point around there's some things that we as a country can manage. Transnet is one of those. We need to get that working. We'll leave it there. That's Vuyiswa Katlang, PwC South Africa Mining Assurance Partner. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We were chatting with Chris Rule from 10X Investments on Friday. They're switching their global equity allocation from the sort of to a less tech and a less US heavy global ETFs, the Dividend Aristocrat. We asked if you think this is a fair idea and if you are following suit. Almost 60% said yes, the rest said nope. That would just be reducing returns. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening. My guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us an awesome rating in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow. Offshore diversification.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.